Oh no, Dame, no! Oh no! I'm so angry! How could they do this to you?
What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horus, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Carlos Boozer, being on my flight to New York City to me talking to him twice. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
All aboard the booze cruise, baby. That's what Stacey King used to say, because yeah, he's baby. An absurd man. But very cool that you got to talk to him in the midst of an otherwise shitty travel day.
Yeah, it was a tough situation. So we were flying back from Salt Lake City to New York City. Booze was on the flight. I'm not trying to toot or brag or anything, but we were in first class, as was Mr. Boozer. Kelly and I have been doing this thing where basically, since our kid's ticket is free until she's two, and you do the lap infant thing, when the price of it's not ridiculous, and because we both have flexible jobs, we were able to fly. This flight was on like a Tuesday afternoon. Like, we'll do the first class upgrade because it's just nice to have the extra room, no one next to you with the wiggly, potentially crying baby. So Booze was in the very front part of first class. We were in the last row of first class. And of course, even though you have all that leg room for him up in the front where the flight attendants are, his legs took up the entire gap, of course.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be 6'9". Yeah.
Yeah, he's enormous. And basically, our flight got delayed in a bunch of different ways. First, we like sat on the runway for an extra like 2 hours because there was like a mechanical issue that they were going to try to fix and then they couldn't. We were already like taxiing, so they had to like drive us back to the gate. We had to get off, get onto another plane. Of course, I clocked immediately that Boozer was on the flight. Like, we took our seat and I was like, that's Carlos Boozer. And then, of course, the whole time I was like, how am I going to talk to Carlos Boozer? Right. So then we had to get on a new plane. The flight takes off. Then by the time we're getting to Newark, there was a rapid thunderstorm that lasted for like only 25 minutes, but they stopped all flights going into Newark. But we didn't have enough fuel to keep circling. So we had been circling for like almost an hour. Then they had to divert us to Boston. We land in Boston. I'm frantically texting our friend Chris Chan like, hey, I might have to sleep at your house. Would that be okay?
Also, there's going to be a baby here.
Yeah, he did say, he was like, my place is not baby proof. It's like, don't worry about it. All she will do is sleep. But then we had to like land in Boston. Then they just like refueled us and then we took off. So the first time I talked to him was when we were refueling. They were, you know, like Kelly and I were going to taking the baby and changing her diaper in the bathroom and stuff. While I was waiting for Kelly to finish, I turned to Booze and I was like, yo, you got to call Danny Ainge, get the team plane here. And he goes, oh, I wish.
It's a funny thing because it's like in that moment, he obviously realizes that you know who he is, but just kind of like rolls with it immediately.
Yeah, he didn't miss a beat. He was wearing full jazz gear because I think he's some sort of like not super, like he's not like an officially titled, like he's not the assistant GM or anything.
You know, it's they keep you on the payroll. If you do a good job for an organization, sometimes they're like, here's a job title for you. I don't know what he does. You know.
I think he's some sort of like player ambassador because there was photos of him on social media, like on the team plane with Ace Bailey when Ace Bailey flew from New York after the draft to Utah to start training camp stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's some sort of physical capacity. He's wearing all jazz gear from like head to toe. But yeah, I was also thankfully wearing my WNBA hoodie for this flight. So like, I'm sure he may have clocked that and been like, this guy knows basketball, obviously. Mm-hmm. So then the other time we talked was we were going to baggage claim after landing. And he was traveling with his daughter, who was maybe like 8 or so. And she had, it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was a like a hard case luggage thing, but it had a scooter attached to it. You know those like three-wheel scooters that kids have? Yeah. I've never seen. So I've seen
the luggages
where like they can ride on it. But this one, it was like you fold down a scooter. So it's like literally like one of those two-wheel in the front, one-wheel in the back scooters that all the toddlers in New York City have. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a suitcase attached to like the vertical pole that goes to the handlebars. And it's like a sizable like hard case thing.
You might have to buy one for yourself.
look, I'm tempted. But like, on what's also wild is like, on top of all of this, the wheels lit up like when you have like shoes that walk when you're a kid and they light up. So, yeah. So cool. So basically we're walking down and it's just like me and Kelly and then Carlos Boozer and his daughter like scooting ahead of us. And I just turned to him and I was like, that's the coolest piece of luggage I've ever seen. And he goes, yeah, it's pretty sweet. And it actually has a lot of storage space too.
You know what? A practical king.
Yeah, it was great. And then his daughter was adorable because as we were waiting for baggage to come out of like the thing, you know, the check bags, literally every suitcase that passed by, she was like, Daddy, is that one ours? Daddy, is that one ours? It was so cute. Oh my gosh. He's a great dad. He was awesome with her. Like he was talking with her the whole flight. Like you could just see him, you know, like interacting with her the whole time. It wasn't like he was like a throw the iPad in front of you kind of parent.
Sure.
It was
imagine
awesome.
Imagine if he was like just an nice iPad dude. Of like his highlights that he just kept making her watch.
Look, this is when I dunked on Robert Zachary. Yeah.
Well, very
cool. So anyway,
cool.
I got to meet Booze. It was cool.
Now, did Carlos Boozer have access to the Teal Memorial locker room?
Yes, he's got access, and there's a whole subsection of the Teal Memorial locker room that is fitted for people who are very tall in case NBA players ever want to come through. So since he's 6'9", it's all proper for
and little cubbies to leave your scooter luggages.
Yep. Look, it has a surprising amount of storage, but this is a great segue. You know who's probably not 6'9", and if they are, they should tell us.
You definitely should tell us because we're very interested in that. But I would say our patrons and a special shout out, of course, as always, to our producer level patrons.
Yes. Shout out to those producers. Polly Burridge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Duncan Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for his first three.
That was the one from last time, but we don't have time. So bang.
Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Balls, Mats Furley, and Utah Jash. And you know who also could let us know about cool new information? I don't know if any people on this team of people are 6'9", but also let us know.
Yeah, I mean, if you work for Shaker and Spoon and you're 6'9", talk to us.
Yep, please do. But yes, Shaker and Spoon is a delivery service where you get some booze, much like Carlos Boozer.
Nice.
Let's say you're having a booze cruise with Carlos Boozer, but you don't know how to make cocktails. Shaker and Spoon has got your back because they will send you a box of all the fixins and mixins and instructions so that you can make some cocktails using one type of liquor, but you'll make three different drinks, four servings of each, and then you get to keep the recipe cards forever. It's cool. And if you go to shakerandspoon.com/horse, you get your box is $20 off, which is about 50% off, which is cool. So shakerandspoon.com/horse. All right, now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to episodes without inserted ads, it's time for some locally inserted ads. And then once those are complete, we'll continue this episode of Horse. Adam, any updates? What's going on?
Just a couple brief updates. I've added a show in Washington, D.C. This will just be a one-night only sort of deal. This is Wednesday, August 20th. So that's the new news to report. But as you're listening to this, when it comes out, I will be in Chicago this coming weekend. So that's the 17th, 18th, and 19th. All those dates are on my website, adamamwala.com/standup. Then after that, I'll be at the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival in Jamestown, New York, August 8th and 9th. The newly added Washington, D.C. date at the D.C. Comedy Loft on Wednesday, August 20th. And then in September, I have some shows in Connecticut and Bethlehem, PA. And that's pretty much it for the short term. So let's cut it there. What about you?
So the big thing on the day you're hearing this, it'll be Tuesday. My new podcast first episode came out yesterday. It's called Professional Talkers.
Nice.
It's with me and Sequoia Simone. We are giving advice about how to navigate awkward conversations since we've had hours of publicly conversations that are sometimes awkward as two professional podcasters. There's the audio version. There's also the video version, which we put a lot of effort into that first video episode. So you can watch that on YouTube. I think also on Spotify, depending on what I do this weekend with the hosting as we record this on July 10th. But what also we're doing is on Sunday, July 20th, from 1 to 4 p.m. in Central Park at the Great Hill Oval, we're having a podcast premiere picnic. Adam, you're invited as well. But we're going to be there just like chilling, chatting. We'll have free stuff to give away, like stickers, and I think maybe some like coupons for free access to the Patreon for like a trial and stuff like that. But yeah, no like true agenda.
Public podcast premiere promo picnic.
Basically, just chilling and chatting, and people are going to be there partying. Bring some snacks, bring a blanket, come meet me and Sequoia and other people who are listening to the pod. We're just going to be kicking it there for some time in Central Park. It's like the very northwest
come
part
meet
of Central
Sequoia
Park.
Under some trees. How about that?
Hey-o, hey-o. So that's that. And then other stuff is just like the same shows that I've had. St. Louis in August and Kansas City in August and then Rhode Island and Pittsburgh. So you can get those tickets at shub.es/tour. The St. Louis one, we had a weird thing where like the link wasn't working because we had to switch venues because the original venue closed down. But the new link is up. Yay.
Sweet.
So get your tickets because right now it says there's only 7 people attending because the ticket link hasn't worked for weeks. Please come through so I feel better about myself.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Super annoying. But what's not super annoying is when we have NBQ&As. Adam, what do we got?
Yes. All right. So we've got a 2-for-1 deal. The first one is not really basketball related, but I do want to share it because it made me laugh. We got an email from Aiden, and the email just says, I don't know if you remember me, but I emailed you freshman year of high school a few years ago. I just graduated. Just thought I would make you feel old.
Yep. Yeah.
Successful
email. It's always tough.
Email.
It's we always tough old. When people say like, oh yeah, I started listening to Potterless when I was in middle school and now I'm graduating college. And I'm like, God,
now I'm married
damn.
And I have 7 children. Now, the other one is particularly relevant because this is a perfect transition into one of the topics of Full Court Press, Get It Like the News. So this is going to be our official transition. We got an email from Danielle, subject WNBQ&A, and the message says, with the new WNBA expansion teams locations being announced, woohoo, what are good team names / color schemes for Portland, Philly, Cleveland, and Detroit? So if you have any general ideas, feel free to throw those out. But yes, this is the first time we're recording since it was officially announced that the WNBA will be once again expanding. We already knew about Portland, but now we know that Philly, Cleveland, and Detroit are getting teams as well. Really, really cool stuff. But any thoughts on team names, color schemes? Do you like when they kind of match what the NBA team does color-wise? Do you like for them to go their own route? Like, what are you thinking for those teams?
I like for them to go their own route. Now, the Portland team, I would guess they will be the Portland Fire, which they were, but I think the Portland Fire only existed for like a season. Like it was not very
I honestly didn't
long-lived.
Remember that they did at all.
They were there from 2000 to 2002.
Okay.
So they were in like the first expansion and then there was a bunch of teams that folded in 2002 and they were one of them. So when they were the Portland Fire, they were like red, black, and gold. So kind of Miami Heat color scheme. And I think that does make sense. I would love to see them do it a little differently. It would be kind of cool to do like a blue flame. Like, you know, when you do like a Bunsen burner and it's like really hot in the center, I think like if they went that regard, because we have enough like fire-based teams that are like red, yellow, black.
Yes.
So let's switch it up. That would be my vote there. Do you have any Portland Fire thoughts before we move on?
No, not particularly, but
Or Portland if they do not fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because they already have, obviously the Trailblazers, the Timbers, I believe are the MLS team.
Yeah. Then so there's the Thorns, which is the women's soccer team.
You feel like it would be something around like a forest theme.
Yeah, if they don't go fire.
Fire is always like kind of tricky because like forest fires are bad. So it's like the connotation of that sometimes seems like, oh, that's like a negative thing. But I don't have any strong opinions on that. Now, Philly has never had a WNBA team.
They've never had a team. Yes. Here's my thing. Just do not, for the love of God, call them the Liberty Bells, B-E-L-L-E-S.
No. Isn't that already the name of like the Sixers dance crew, probably?
Whatever it is, don't do it.
No,
fight the urge.
Yeah.
Philly, give me just a not Declaration of Independence, Ben Franklin-ass
team.
Sure,
yeah.
Like,
the cheese steak.
Just something else. Anything else.
Yeah.
I think the color scheme, if the color scheme's red, white, and blue, I'm going to be pissed as hell. Like, the city flag for Philadelphia is blue and yellow. So, like, give me blue and yellow as the color scheme. Mm-hmm. Like, switch it up. Do not give me an America team. I really hope we don't get an America team. They're always so boring. And right now, I am not proud to be an American. I'm embarrassed to be an American.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I can't wait for the midterms. So, like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Give me
something
just
else.
Not Liberty, the team. I've seen them floating of like, what about the Freedom? It's like, we already have a team called the Liberty. Don't do it. Or like, what about the Revolution? That's better,
yeah, also,
but I don't
like,
want it.
Philadelphia, not necessarily my favorite city, but it does have more to offer than just being an old American city. Like, there's other interesting things about it. The Rockies.
Yeah.
Like the sure. boxing theme. The, I don't care.
Wawa. I don't know, man. Yeah, like,
I like it.
Wawa better be the jersey sponsor.
The Hoagies. But like,
the Hoagies. Come on. Yeah. The Yins.
Think of the merch.
I don't know. Just give me just not America.
The
team.
Rolling Rocks. All right. Cleveland and Detroit. Now, Cleveland. I know Detroit used
rockers.
To be the Shock, and the Cleveland, mm-hmm. yeah, used to be the Rockers. Do
yes.
they just go back to that, do we think?
I feel like those teams are around long enough that they will.
Yeah.
If they didn't do it, I would be floored. The Rockers were around from 97 to 03, and then the Shock were around from 98 until 2009. So, like, they definitely will be the Detroit Shock. I would be so shocked if they are not. Mm. They just had Pistons colors, basically red, white, and blue. I would love to see them switch it up. I would love to see them do something a little bit differently. I think like early Shock was like blue and yellow, so maybe they should do that. But I like when the teams are different. I like when they're not just exactly copy-paste of whatever the NBA team is.
Right.
So give me not red, white, and blue Detroit Shock.
Any thoughts on Cleveland?
I think they should be the Rockers because that's a cool name. And their logo was cool because it was like a guitar in an R, so
right.
like a guitar. And their color scheme was cool because it was like, it was very mid-2000s Memphis Grizzlies, like the mm-hmm. white chocolate Memphis Grizzlies, where it was like black and like a steel blue and gray. And I don't think any WNBA team is rocking that right now.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like they should just go back, just embrace the Rockers. So I think, you know. Embrace tradition.
I love it.
And bring it back. That's my thought.
So, yeah, great question. And we also got some other really fun questions. So, as always, if you want to ask us a question, you can reach out to us at horsehoopspod@gmail.com. That is the
and
best way.
And we give
way.
Priority to patrons.
We do give priority to patrons. And I'll just full disclosure, it is much more likely that I see it if you send us an email rather than a DM that we may or may not see. So, highly recommend the email and obviously let us know if you're a patron. If we don't immediately recognize you as one, because you do get priority. So we are fully immersed in full court press. Get it like the news. Obviously, the big WNBA news, other than the ongoing season, was, of course, the expansion. But in NBA land, there have been I don't even know if flurry does it justice, but it just an obscene amount of moves. We can't possibly talk about all of them, nor should we. But I guess let's start with the Knicks. Thoughts on Mike Brown being the new head coach? Thoughts on acquiring Jordan Clarkson? Where are you at? What are the vibes like?
I did a longer thing that I'm going to put up on Patreon where, like, the day it happened, I did a big voice memo of just, like, here are my initial thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Brown, when you think of him, like, in terms of coaching prowess to Tibbs, is, like, a lateral move. I would say they're on the same tier. But we are in a position where we might just need a change of scenery. Like, we might just need a fresh face coaching the team. So that might be okay. Especially if we bring in the rumors that we're going to try to get James Borrego as the lead assistant coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think, makes up for the biggest downside to Mike Brown. Because, like, Mike Brown is, like, smart with offensive and defensive strategies. He's been on winning teams. He's coached superstars like LeBron and Kobe before. And he's been a part of, like, four championship teams as an assistant. He had that great run with the Kings. The one knock on him is that he doesn't seem to be like a playoff tactician. Like when Rick Carlisle, it's like, whoa, look at this strategy he unleashed. That's incredible. He's never been known for that. And I think it would be nice if we did have that, because I don't think Tom Thibodeau is that either. So if we get James Borrego or someone else who is that as the top assistant, I'll feel much better. So I wasn't like, oh my God, yay, Mike Brown. But I'm not like, gosh, darn it, Mike Brown. So... And like, the vibes are great. He's funny. He's, like, very energetic. And I feel like he will improve the locker room vibes, which, like, I don't know. Knicks games were, like, we were a fun team, but it didn't feel like we were always fun and having a good time on the court. And it wasn't joyous. And I feel like he can bring the joy.
Right. And listen, Tibbs, I think, is a very good coach. I think it's entirely possible that he gets another shot somewhere else. Who knows? But he is, to use an old baseball term, he is kind of like a red ass, which is to say that like, he's just not somebody who's going to at least outwardly have a lot of fun. Like, I've seen things where he pops onto like Brunson's podcast and like has a good time and is like jovial. But in a basketball context, he's very like hard and firm, and I do think that Mike Brown is someone who you can see him enjoying it more, which there is something to be said for that. The other big move, I guess, for the Knicks was acquiring or signing Jordan Clarkson.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Which is cool. I don't like him as a player, but we got him for the veteran minimum because the Jazz waived him. So basically, he's just replacing what campaign was this year, and mm-hmm. he's miles better than campaign.
Yes.
So like, I'll take that. I just hope we don't have like a very Jordan Clarkson forward situation.
No, I don't think so.
It will be funny because there's a historic clip of Mike Breen just like shitting on Jordan Clarkson one game when he had a really bad game. So now it's this whole thing of like, oh,
way
no, Mike
off.
Breen hates. Well, yeah, it was just like Jordan Clarkson chucks up another one.
Yeah.
So we'll try to link to that. But that'll be funny if Breen addresses it all. I don't think he will, but it's kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, there are some other wild moves, though, not involving the New York Knickerbockers. The Bucks waived and stretched Damian Lillard so that they could sign Miles Turner. So
yeah,
waving and stretching is basically when you tell someone, get out of here. We don't want you on the team anymore. We'll still pay you your money, but instead of paying it over, say, 2 years, for example, we will pay it over 5 years, for example, so that we can have more room to pay people to play on our team immediately. So they did that with Dame because he's going to be out for the full year. And then they signed Miles Turner in the space. This seems like a move to appease Giannis, who had, there were reportings and he made a post insinuating that he was upset by this decision. I think he is Drake pretending to be upset at Kevin Durant getting injured.
Sure.
Like he's like, oh no, Dame, no. Oh no.
He knows it looks good for him.
I'm so
what?
Angry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How could they do this to you?
So I don't think the Bucks are like a contender by any means, but like now they'll at least be a team that makes the playoffs.
And it's a big hit to the Pacers. I mean, they're losing a big piece of their finals team and,
yeah.
and the longest tenured Pacer.
Yeah, I'm glad that like my span of liking the Pacers lasted like literally 3 days, because this whole thing, it's so stupid. They had all this thing where like, we got this championship team. Like they've never gone into the luxury tax where you have to like pay extra to keep a team together. And they've like famously never done it. And then now the owners are like, we're doing it this time. We got to keep this group together. And then Tyrese Haliburton gets hurt and they're like, ooh, an excuse to not have to pay the full team.
Yeah.
Buy Miles Turner, who's been a Pacer for life and we've dangled in trade talks every year of his existence
totally.
On our team.
Yeah.
Like, super shitty. I do think it's one of those weird situations of, like, he's getting paid more than he should. Like, he's not that good for how much money he's getting. Mm-hmm. And I think this contract, like, will look bad in 3 years. But at the same time, I also think it's a bad look to the fans to not keep this dude around.
Yeah, no, totally.
And they're going to be way worse. But, like, I get they're taking a year off. But you know, when Haliburton is back, not next season, but the season after, like, you got to have someone that compliments him as well as Miles Turner did. And I don't know that they'll be able to find
I think it's only justifiable if they add after next year. Because you can assume they're punting on next year. Maybe they get, like, a good draft pick, and that helps them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like how the Spurs kind of lucked their way into, the number two pick this year. But, I think unless you spend after next year, if I'm a Pacers fan, I'm pretty pissed off. But
what's frustrating is they only did it to save money. It's not
right.
They're not, like, a repeater tax team where they get some sort of, like, team benefit for saving money. It's literally just the owners not wanting to pay money.
Yeah. But
so poopy.
Yeah. Before we get on to our very fun interview, any other moves that jumped out at you that you want to mention? I mean, there were so many.
The Nuggets made a bunch of trades that are really good and signings that are good. Like they got Tim Hardaway Jr. for the vet minimum. They traded away Michael Porter Jr. and got Cam Johnson in return, which I think works out for them like financially. They were able to trade Dario Saric for Jonas Valanciunas, which like Dario Saric was like an awful contract for them.
Mm-hmm.
But then Jonas Valanciunas is now, this is very dramatic. We'll have to cover this next episode to see how it's resolved. He was like, wanted to leave the NBA to play in Greece and like forfeit his contract, but the Nuggets are like, no, dude, you're gonna play for us. And like,
oh, wow.
I don't know if they can force him to do it. It's like,
no,
he doesn't want to be in the NBA, but they're like, we need you.
Huh.
I don't know. It's gonna be very interesting. Like, they might just like not let him out of the contract, but like, legally, is that, can you force someone? Like, I don't know how it works.
I don't think so. I don't know.
I have no idea like what the stipend or situation, like, I guess he'd be banned from the league, but if he's not trying to play in the NBA anymore, like, does he care?
Probably
I have
not.
No idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, but they like the Nuggets are now looking quite solid. They made some really good moves. The Thunder like extended and gave contracts to all their young guys, which makes sense.
Oh, SGA,
and then the Rockets,
huge bag, Holmgren, huge bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Rockets, we had already talked about the Kevin Durant move and everything, but now they added some other pieces like Clint Capella, Dorian Finney-Smith. So the Rockets, I think, have had the best offseason out of any team, so they're looking good. The Hawks have like made a lot of really good moves, including swindling the Pelicans out of their pick because they traded their first round pick unprotected to move up 10 spots in the draft, which is like an unbelievably idiotic move. So, yeah, I think there's like a lot of different moves going on. And I know we are pressed for time in this episode because we have a long interview that was very fun and stuff. But definitely a lot of movement, a lot of moves, a lot of drama, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. And if you want to get into the nitty gritty of it all, if you're more into the wins and losses, we'll post a link to kind of like all of the moves that have already happened. So you can go through and be like, okay, I know that name. Don't know that name. You know, look into it further if you want to. And then Mike's going to post his kind of audio reaction to the Knicks moves as well.
Yeah, and maybe Adam and I will even, or one of us will do a more like thorough breakdown if you are into like the super duper nitty gritty of some of the other moves that happened. There's also stuff that like is rumored but hasn't happened yet. Like, are the Suns going to waive and stretch Bradley Beal? It seems likely. So there's other stuff that like hasn't officially happened yet that might soon.
It's in the offing, as you might say. But we'll that is going to conclude Full Court Press. Get it like the news. And now we enter a very fun interview with our softball teammate and author, Gabe Henry. All right, folks, as mentioned, we have a very special guest on the podcast today. Joining us, we have author and humorist Gabe Henry, author of the recently released critically acclaimed book, Enough is Enough, Our Failed Attempts to Make English Easier to Spell. But frankly, the best credit in my heart, excellent softball pitcher, great teammate, Gabe Henry. How's it going?
Hey, Adam. Hey, Mike. Good to see you off the field and on these digital platforms.
Yeah, but always better to see you on the field, if I'm being honest.
Agreed. I think different personalities come out off the field and on the field. Some people I play with know me as a very loud, vocal arguer of calls. Off the field, I think I'm pretty easygoing.
Yeah, I think you and I are similar in that regard, where I think if there's people who only knew me from softball and nothing else, they'd be like, this guy is a menace. but you get it when you're inside the lines. You just get to, you know, it's a whole different thing.
Agreed.
I feel, Gabe, that any arguing I've seen from you is reasonable. That I would say that.
Right.
I've played
you're
with
not
people
Ben.
Who are just like, yeah. Yeah. For the purposes of anonymity, we'll call him Ben, which is his real name. I don't know if he'll listen to this, but Ben, if you do, I know some great therapists. Let's get started in earnest. So, Gabe, I guess you and I have known each other for a while, both through softball and through your work at Littlefield, which is a comedy venue in Brooklyn. But talk to us a little bit about your career, how you got to where you are now, your history with sports, specifically basketball, if you have one. But tell us, who is Gabe Henry? Who are you, man?
Well, I'm an author. That's my current career. My first dream career, though, was basketball player. Mm. First, all my birthday wishes from the ages of 3 to 12 were that I'd become a basketball player.
Sure.
And for context, I'm about 5'6", maybe 5'7" with cleats on. So my heroes growing up were people like Spud Webb, Muggsy Bogues, these really short ball players who could hold their own. And I spent a lot of time like training myself to jump high because that's how I was going to combat this, I'm a step below people because of my height. So I have to compensate for that. Yeah, but don't turn out to be a basketball player, at least not yet. Been spending the past about 10 years writing books. And this most recent book that came out a couple months ago, Enough is Enough, it's about this strange, little known movement in history called simplified spelling, which was this attempt to shorten and simplify how we spell our words, like respelling laugh, L-A-F, or though, T-H-O. And this movement has been going on for hundreds of years and led by people like Benjamin Franklin and Noah Webster, all in this effort to make our language easier to spell. That's what's kind of occupied me for the past 2 to 3 years, at least.
Well, I've always said, like, I feel very lucky that I grew up speaking English because I would hate to learn it. It is truly an illogical language in many, many ways.
Yeah. A lot of people who speak English as a second language will say that English is pretty easy to learn grammatically, syntactically. As a spoken language, it's pretty easy. But as a written language, it's just atrocious. Maybe one of the worst in the world so far as phonetic values of letters to sounds. Looking at letters like O-U-G-H, you could pronounce that as through or though or tough, or cough or bow. There's about 8 different ways you can
spell that. Slaughter and laughter. Like, how does that make sense?
Yeah. And daughter. And
sure.
Laughter rhymes with after, but spelled nothing alike. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. What initially got you into this subject? Like, why was this something that you were like, I'm going to write a book about this?
I first learned about simplified spelling back in college, and I've always loved language, especially quirky, humorous aspects of it. And this just struck me as the most absurd piece of history that I had never learned before. This idea that people in revolutionary times were walking around with their powdered wigs and their feathered quills, writing love, L-U-V, like some teenager with a smartphone.
T-T-Y-L. I mean,
B-R-B. It was just so absolutely absurd. And very few people have heard of this movement. I just love the concept of humanizing these founding fathers, these looming historical figures who you only ever see as statues or full page textbook pages. And you never see them as humans, as these people who had failed ideas as well as successful ones. So this book ended up becoming this kind of compilation of failures, this like biography of futility, because all these people over hundreds of years tried reforming our spelling in these somewhat comical ways and never really succeeded.
Right. But I mean, as you exhibit through the book and as I've seen in some of the interviews you've done, like if you do spell things phonetically and have someone read it, they'll pronounce it the way it's supposed to be. Like, you can pretty easily figure out what it's supposed to be saying. And in the same breath, you're like, oh yeah, this is way more logical than how we've been spelling all of these things for hundreds of years.
Yeah, it's this friction between logic and rationality versus tradition. A lot of people don't want to change the language because language is deeply rooted in tradition and it's part of people's identity. You know, whether you grew up as a good speller or poor speller, you kind of own that as a badge of honor. You know, I've heard people say, you know, I never lost a spelling bee. Or I've heard people say, you know, I never won a spelling bee. And there's almost the same kind of pride around it. It becomes part of your identity. So people are resistant to these changes as logical and as rational as they seem.
I mean, to bring it to basketball a little, it makes sense because there's so many things that we do and the NBA does that just seems to... Like, yes, a lot of it is money, but a lot of it is also tradition, too. Like, people are always so resistant to changes of things, even that would improve the sport, whether that's a change in the rules, whether that's a change in, like, number of games in a season or whatever. There's so many people that are like, oh, but it's not the way that we used to do it. So I think just that wanting to stick to the way things were is just a universal tendency that goes across so many different things.
Yeah, we're all driven by some vague idea of nostalgia, probably tracing back to our childhood, the way things used to be. You know, the game is not like it was. There's always comparisons about how Michael Jordan would fare in today's NBA, how Steph Curry would fare in Jordan's day. Oh, they were harder back then. Oh, the refs call it differently now. It's always this concept of things were simpler back then. People were harder. You know, you scrape your knee, you rub some dirt in it. It's all... Yeah, it's probably
and then you didn't have a leg anymore.
Then you didn't have a leg. You just bit down on a towel, snorted some ether, and then you were good to go, just short, one leg short. You know, so this, it's a vague idea of like things used to be better. So that's the resistance to new reforms.
What's funny to me about it is that I have observed a very organic form of what you talk about via my dad's family. So I don't even know if you know this, Gabe, but my dad is Indian. So like that whole half of my family is from India. And Indian people, like most of the people that I know speak English, but they all learned it as a second language. And they're very fast to just like shorten things as it's convenient. But that's very dangerous if you don't know that certain words or certain spellings have different connotations. And this is generally a fairly PG-13 show, but one of the most common ones that I've seen many times, a hallmark of Indian people is they always want you to like visit them. And so in a like WhatsApp group chat, like some old auntie will say, when will you come? C-U-M. And this is like a common thing amongst Indian people. That's just like, yeah, every Indian person over 50 spells... come that way, and no one wants to correct them because that would involve talking to them about a taboo subject.
What are you going to do? What have you done?
What can you do?
What have you done, Adam, to reform this?
I've done nothing. I've talked about it and made fun of it on podcasts. I've done nothing to help at all. But I will say, we don't want to talk down about our podcast, which we love very much, but we are one of the least impressive stops on your press tour because it's been pretty amazing. I'm going to give you the opportunity to brag a little bit. What are some of the things that you've been able to do? Because you've been all over like morning television. I know you made a New York Times list. Like, this is your opportunity to brag about it.
All right, here's the bragging. My league, my all-time average batting is about 650.
There it is.
No, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been on a few weeks ago, CBS Mornings. It's national morning news. I lost days, weeks of sleep leading up to it. Man, the amount of anxiety. Two are performers. I don't think it comes as naturally to me. Most of my career is spent alone in a room with a computer and my brain. And I don't usually get feedback on my work until it's like a 2-year period where you write something now. And then in 2 years, people are starting to comment on it. So to be in real time on live TV, is very scary. It was a great experience though. I did some local TV in, Portland and Philly. And then the print stuff, it was reviewed in the Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, NPR, and it was reviewed in the New York Times. And then the book was the cover of the New York Times book review a couple months ago. Big letters.
So cool.
Big red, bold, all caps letters saying, "Long live the new spelling." And it was a review about my book and this one other book by John McWhorter. And, you know, they don't tell you this is going to happen. You just wake up one morning and people are texting you, you know, the people who get the Times delivered, which is a number that's growing smaller and smaller. But
sure.
I got a lot of texts that morning and it blew my mind. And it's kind of the pinnacle of anything I was expecting. And it was beyond what I was expecting.
Sure.
And the idea that it was just a surprise one morning felt really dreamlike.
Yeah, no, it's got to feel gratifying. I mean, whether you're an author or a screenwriter or any sort of thing where the payoff is not until later or sometimes not at all, it's very gratifying and satisfying, I would assume, to get that kind of feedback, because a lot of people spend years working on something that then either nobody sees or nobody talks about, and you know it's good, but it's just like, how can I reach people with it? So I think that's really cool that it seems to have found an audience. I don't know what you've learned in terms of like sales and all that sort of gross stuff, but like, it seems to me that it's doing very well.
It's doing well in the softball community.
Hell yeah.
Yes. Good.
Mike came up to me a few weeks ago with a copy and a Sharpie right after a game. I think we won the game too. So it was,
we did win the game.
Glory upon glory. And he said, "Can you sign this for me?" And I said, "No." Definitely.
Said, "I don't talk to fans." And you walked away.
Yeah, no, it didn't. But it's like, no, look, it was great. I would have had it earlier, but I was like out of town for like a couple of weeks. And with the kid, it's been harder to do the Monday afternoon league. But this is a good segue because Adam and I have talked about our softball team many different times on the podcast. We have a running joke that even though it's a basketball podcast, we make baseball references all the time. This is the first time that we've had, yes, you're on our team, but I would say a non-biased party. I would love, and you can be as brutally honest, at least to me, as you want to, for the listeners, so that it doesn't just sound like Adam and I are gassing ourselves up. What is your like honest take on Adam and I's playing style, playing ability, etc.? I'm fine for as harsh as you want to be. Adam, you can be as comfortable for how much you want Gabe to either roast or praise.
No.
But
yeah,
I'm a big boy and I can take it.
First time, long time. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Well, Mike, I've also pitched against you, so I know some of your weak spots. Lefty, super speedy leadoff hitter. No one else I'd prefer at the top of the lineup. Solid, solid fielder. Also really smart. And that's the thing about playing in these rec softball leagues is you can tell when someone is just beefy and they can hit a ball 100 miles, but they don't know how to run the bases and they're going to get themselves tagged out on a dumb tag. So, Mike, I'd put you out of 10. I'd put you at a solid 8.6.
Oh,
wow. I'll gladly take that to the bank.
Adam, supreme pop. Also, Oppo, you can go to any field. I think your best, your power alley is like right center. It's also, as a righty, outfielders aren't always expecting it and they underestimate you. And as a fielder, and this is not hyperbole. No one else I'd prefer at first base. When I'm shortstop or when I'm pitching,
appreciate it.
First base, I know what's being held down by you. You also play the position super well, and you know when to go for a grounder that's toward second versus going to first and for the cover. You know how to pitch the ball to me ahead of me when I'm covering first as a pitcher.
One of my favorite plays. It's so satisfying. Yeah. And you actually cover first, which a lot of pitchers in our leagues don't. They'll stand
there and look at it. Oh, my God. So frustrating.
So if I gave Mike an 8.7, Adam, unfortunately, I hate to say it, I'm going to have to give you an 8.8.
Ooh. I didn't know who the unfortunately was in the direction of. The funny thing is, Gabe, I feel that my slow pitch game is very different from my fast pitch game. Like in fast pitch, or modified is what we call it, I don't feel like I have the control to be like, I'm going to hit it to right center. Whereas in slow pitch, I'm like, I can kind of manipulate what I'm doing. But I will say in terms of hustle points, I'm giving Mike an 11 out of 10. And I could not give the same to myself. Any game where Shubes is not actively dirty at the end of it feels like a failure in his eyes. No one else thinks that way, but
I'm so disappointed if I never had to slide. And
if you slide into the handshake lines if he has to do it.
If you're taking a shower after a softball game and the bathtub is not full of dirt, you've done something wrong.
Right. I take off my softball pants like in the hallway of my apartment so that the dirt like goes into the hallway. And if you don't have like a little pile of dirt out there that you have to vacuum up afterwards, come on. What are you doing? And thankfully the setup in our apartment is that we have an in-unit washer dryer, not to stun on people. But
I mean, if you have a baby, you kind of need that.
My God, I can't recommend that enough to anyone with a child. But it's right by the door. So I will literally like take off the pants. Make sure no one's in my hallway. Take off the pants, open the door, and then just like go directly from legs to washer. Like no intermediary into the hamper or anything, because you're just going to have dirt all over. Or like in the little floor, you get the crinkly dirt on the bottom of your feet. Yeah. Nah, you got to go straight to the washing machine.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I can't have roommates anymore. They just don't understand that you come with crumbs. You come home with crumbs. And you need a vacuum handy or a washer dryer.
If anyone ever needed to stalk you, they could just follow the trail of sand to your home.
It'll be the shortest mystery novel.
Yeah. Well, Gabe, we're so happy that you fell for this trick that we were actually bringing here to talk about our book and not compliment us on our softball game. So we'll let you go now. It's been great talking to you. No, so what we wanted to do is, first of all, for anyone who's not still like understanding the concept, I don't know if you have a particular like word or phrase or a good intro into like explaining the conceit or the concept of how one would phoneticize a complicated word. But what we'll do is I'm going to have you try to explain it, and then we're going to take some complicated NBA and WNBA basketball names and try to spell them out phonetically via an audio medium, which, good transition, I'll let you explain. We're talking before we started recording about like the difficulty of doing this in an audiobook format. So feel free to expound on that, and then we'll get into our demonstration here.
Yeah, so the core of the movement of simplified spelling is that English spelling is absurd. And I mentioned the example of O-U-G-H, how there's eight different ways to pronounce it. And then we have laughter and after. You have a word like tomb, which rhymes with room, but not with comb. It's an absurd system. And a lot of it has to do with the history of England and all the countries that conquered it, and the Romans who spoke Latin and the French and the Germans. And English today is this hodgepodge of all these different languages, and because of that we have different spelling rules, and it is very difficult for children to learn and immigrants to learn. It takes 2 to 3 times longer for children, English speaking children, to learn our spelling compared to Spanish or German speaking children. We also have twice the rate of dyslexia. I mean, there's some real world reasons why simplifying and phoneticizing our spelling would be important to these reformers. So someone like Benjamin Franklin in 1768, he would take a word like busy, which we spell B-U-S-Y, and he spelled it B-I-Z-I. And he would do this with across the board, and he took out letters like C from our alphabet, because any role that C plays in a word, you could do with a K or with an S. So we saw it as redundant. Noah Webster, who's the father of American English. He's the author of Webster's Dictionary. He tried to write though as T-H-O and through as T-H-R-U and tongue as T-U-N-G. So this is basically what we're dealing with, like the idea that one letter should have one sound all the time, and one sound should have only one letter to represent it.
To your earlier point, by the way, it is genuinely hilarious to think about Webster typing like a 13-year-old girl.
it's crazy. Very funny. You should, if you image. Like examples of his actual writing from 1789, and he's saying things like tough should be spelled T-U-F, grieve should be spelled G-R-E-E-V, and daughter should be D-A-W-T-E-R. It goes back to the idea that this is so logical. Yes, you can admit that and still be against it because, you know, it's so ingrained in us, this system of spelling. And we've had to practice it and learn it. And we kind of, some people have this idea that, yeah, if I could do it, the next generation could do it. Why make it softer for them?
Right.
It's also interesting that there's some parts of society where like we've allowed the simplified spelling to come through, but it's only in that case, like through is always O-U-G-H unless it's a drive through, and then it's T-H-R-U. And then you both would know, like for late night comedy, like every now and then it's late night N-I-T-E or like light beer is L-I-T-E sometimes. And it's just like, well, that's the only time we're allowed to misspell it.
And those spellings you mentioned have become so ubiquitous just in the culture that they're now in Webster's Dictionary. So they've now attained this formal inclusion. A word like, you said drive-through, but also throughway, which came to us in the 1930s, just growing out of the simplified spelling movement. That's in Webster's Dictionary. These are all formal spellings we have. So once in a while, these simplified spellings catch on.
Or something wrong. I mean, famously, they added nuclear as an alternate pronunciation of nuclear because George W. Bush didn't know how to say the word nuclear.
They added that to our formal.
Yeah.
I think George Bush just had an in with Webster, and he was...
It could be. Well, that's actually what the W stands for. A lot of people don't know that.
Webster, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then we have words like that came out of our new online digital age, like OMG and LOL, which are also in Webster's Dictionary and the Oxford English Dictionary. They've caught on to such an extent that the editors there said it's past time to be calling these slang and informal. They're basically formalized now.
So, it's not as if we're talking about something that never changes. It's just that the changes are gradual and begrudging most of the time.
Begrudging, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So what would be a good, let's say, gateway word or phrase to kind of use as an example of how one might turn a complicated spelling into a more reasonable spelling? And feel free to, you know, cite something from the book, whatever you want.
Let's take a word like conscience. And I'm using this word because it was the word I lost on in my fourth grade spelling bee.
That you think about it or anything.
No, I never thought about it since.
Dude, it's
this
not
moment.
As bad as me losing on cult because the vice principal didn't say no when I said like the horse, and I said C-U-L-T, and she said C-U-L-T, and I said that's not the horse. I'm not still holding on to that one.
And clearly, the name of your podcast has nothing to do with this loss as a child,
this repressed trauma.
Every day, it's just God. Dang it, Mrs. Pramberger. Give me a break.
Try to spell Pramberger. That should have been the test.
Yeah.
Ugh.
All right. So
L-O-S-E-R is how you spell it.
So
jeez.
Conscience.
Yeah.
Can we play a game where I try? Can I try?
Yeah.
Oh, like how the simplified. Because the real spelling is conscience, which I literally have to say in my brain every time I write out the word conscience.
Well, just a point on that. I didn't realize it was conscience until I watched the movie As Good As It Gets, in which Helen Hunt explains that conscience, she's trying to spell it in this letter and she can't do it. And she's like, conscience? That can't be right. And ever since I watched that movie, I've been able to spell it.
Yeah. Well, also in the spirit of sharing our deep childhood traumas, this wasn't even in a spelling bee, but I have a traumatic memory from reading out loud in class. I don't remember what we were reading, but I had never seen the word crocheting spelled. Like I knew the word, but I pronounced it crocheting, which is what it looks like.
Oof. I mean, yeah.
Tough blow when you're in like sixth grade.
Yeah. Well, can we have Adam try to spell conscience and then Mike try to phonetically spell it?
Well, I certainly know how to spell it for real, but let's see. So the real spelling is C-O-N-S-C-I-E-N-C-E. But I mean, we can work as a team here, Mike. Yeah. I mean, the con is con.
The con is fine.
So, I mean, if you want to do K-O-N, you can do that. But
nah,
C-O-N.
We're not.
That's maybe two
Franklin
N's.
Would have done a K.
Sure.
Oh, you really? Okay.
Yeah, he didn't like C.
K-O-N.
All right, so we'll say K-O-N. And then, but see, it's a weird conscience. S-H-O-O. No, that sounds like shoe.
No, it's shun. Like, yeah, do you do the I? Do you do the U? You
could S-H-U-N?
Do
like S-H-U-N?
Like conscience?
Yeah, this is tough.
I think it's more of a conscience, but then it's not like conscience. It's a really tough in-between one.
Yeah, the pronunciation of shunts, if that's how people say it, like, how the hell do you, I don't know, Gabe?
Right. You got to go science. It's the only way.
Yeah, there you go. And we're back to where we started.
I feel strongly, not strongly, but I feel there's something similar to, we have a rhyming book for our daughter called, not homophones, but llamaphones. And it's a book of homophones. And then each page is like a picture of a llama with one of the things. And then some of them are like C, and he's looking through binoculars, and then C, and it's the ocean, and that's legit. But there's a couple in there that I don't think are legit because I think they're slightly wrong. And one of them is prince, like the royalty, and then prince, like footprints. And I was like, that's not the same. Like, I know it's like if you were rapping and rhyming, like, yeah, for sure. But like to say them, there's like ever so slightly of a difference of saying like prince or prince. Like, you don't hit it the same way. At least I wouldn't. I'm one of those people. Yeah. I think it was the New York Times did one of those like answer these questions and figure out like where you're from. And I'm like from the one part of central New Jersey that pronounces Mary, Mary, and Mary differently. So like I might just be very super specific. Mm. But every time I get to that page of llamaphones, I'm a little upset. They also similarly missed, and it's the llama missing a basketball shot and then missed like in the air. And again, like it's so similar, but it's not, I don't say those words identically.
I do think to the common ear, it does sound the same though, right?
Yeah. To the common ear, yes. But like, I think this specifically, like when we're trying to think of conscience, it's like, it to me, it feels similar of like, it's something's just not 100%.
Now, I don't want to undermine you on your own podcast.
Please go for it. Please do.
I know I already gave you a decimal place lower than Adam in the...
Knock me down, please, please.
That hurt more than Colt, honestly, if I know I was... Mike.
Look, this is the fuel I need. I'm going to hit a home run next time, and I'm going to round the bases. I'm going to be like, 8.9, fuck you, Gabe.
Just staring at me the whole time.
I see prince and prince, and mist is exactly the same. I think we're just... we're seeing it in our head. And that's one of the things with our language that might be a little bit different than other spellings. And a lot of these reformers pointed this out, is that we know how to differentiate spellings kind of photographically in our memory. Mm-hmm. We can see the word rather than spelling it out phonetically letter by letter. In a lot of other languages that are phonetic, you can sound it out letter by letter, and you can see how each letter makes this individual sound. But for us, because there's so much inconsistency in our spellings, we kind of self-train to memorize words as an image block. So you're seeing mist, M-I-S-T, in your head versus mist. And maybe you're thinking, they can't possibly be sounding the same. But, you know, if you isolate those audio snippets of your voice and actually compare them, I think it's exactly the same, basically.
I have the power to do that for this episode. I'll look at the waveforms and then see if there's any different shape
of
it.
That's amazing, yeah.
So now back to conscience. We've got the con part down, but the shunts is giving us trouble. How would you do it, Gabe?
Okay, conch. Now I'm...
This is a good example because it's hard.
I know. I've got the magnifying glass so close to it that I have lost all objectivity. Mm. Conscience. Because you got the ch and a sh. So let's just say... It's imperfect, but I would say S-C-H, it's imperfect, but I'll go with K-O-N-S-C-H-U-N-Z? T-Z?
Yeah.
Conscience.
Conscience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we can't involve a C. The C is confusing, and Benjamin Franklin wouldn't want us to.
God, no.
Yeah.
And that's what we're always trying to do. We're trying to make Ben happy.
I think that's the challenge, and what I'm realizing in like doing this exercise is that the way we spell things, even though they are illogical, is so ingrained if you're an English speaker that my brain went back to like, oh yeah, C-E. But C-E doesn't mean anything. It's just what we know it to mean because we've assigned it that. So like to actually focus on like, what are these sounds supposed to sound like? And what are these letters supposed to signify? That's right. It's very interesting. So
and there's...
Yeah.
there is no right or wrong answer. There's no immutably correct or incorrect way to phoneticize a word. Looking through all the history of spelling reformers, you'll see that very rarely two people would agree on a spelling of a multisyllabic word like conscience mm-hmm. or association. They have, I mean, there's as many different interpretations of those words as there are accents in the language or just whatever psychological drive is taking these reformers to this cause. Right. It'll span the whole spectrum.
So now that we've got some of these skills in place, I would love to challenge ourselves with the phonetic spelling of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Ooh, which I believe I am saying properly. And I feel like I've got a good read on Giannis, right? Because Giannis is spelled, the actual spelling is G-I-A-N-N-I-S. Now, I'm going to assume that we're going to involve a Y, because a Y is yeah. going to be the most reasonable. So my spelling would be Y-O-N-I-S-S, Giannis? Does that sound?
I would have done Y-O-N-N-I-S.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because I think you hold the yan enough. Like, it's Giannis. It's the two parts of the syllables, like Giannis.
So then how do you combat the instinct, though, if you see just an I-S, to pronounce it like is versus is?
Okay, so...
Giannis, Giannis. Mm.
So if you're really attempting to reform every aspect of spelling, you'd say Giannis as an I-Z. So every time you have the word is in a sentence, it'd be I-Z. Every time you have the word of in a sentence, it would be O-V or U-V. So
okay.
that's the easy solution.
Not of. Yeah, right. Wow. Oh, man. I'm never going to look at the word of the same way.
we're gonna go with Y-O-N-N-I-S. Mm-hmm. Now, Giannis. Some people say Antetokounmpo. I believe the correct pronunciation is Antetokounmpo.
Okay.
So how in the world
yes,
would you
there
get
is no
to...
second N there. It's A, because it's spelled A-N-T-E-T-O-K-O-U-N-M-P-O. So yeah, it's Antetokounmpo.
Okay. We're going to let the pro handle this one. Gabe, what do you got?
This is tough because my instinct is to spell that first syllable with an A. First of all, he spells it with an A, but also I imagine in my head it's ah, like ah, you know, ah, real monsters.
It's not on tentacumpo, right. Like it's ah.
But there's also like an tentacumpo?
The sound when you're like, making a realization, like ah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So that sound sounds exactly the same as the vowel in Giannis, which is an O. Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I might make that first letter an O, maybe an O-H. So let's say O-T-E-T.
Atet.
Atet.
Okay.
A-K.
Yeah, because Antetokounmpo instead of Ateto. Yeah. You don't say Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
Right.
Antetokounmpo.
So we got the K and then O-O-N-T-O.
O-O-N-B-O.
I think he pronounced it with Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, there was also a time when some broadcasters were like throwing a B in there to like sound more, I don't know. but every now and then, there was a couple of broadcasters who were like, it's Antetokounmpo. And I'm like, there's no B.
No.
So I'm going to need Giannis to tell us this, not you.
Wait, so do you remember it? So Y-O-N-N-I-S. And then what's the full phonetic spelling of Antetokounmpo, as you just said it?
O-T-E-N-T-A-K-O-O-N-B-O.
I think it would be pretty close if someone saw that written out. I don't know the B.
I think you just got to switch the N. Like, I think it's got to be on teta. So I think you said O teten.
Okay, so I looked this up in preparation for this podcast. I'm not an amateur here. And I found out that a lot of people, maybe even Giannis himself, pronounces it not on tentacupo, but a ten. Ten. Let me say it again. Antetokounmpo.
That is confusing because he does not spell it that way.
Man, I could be super wrong. I looked it up and I've seen some broadcasters announce it. I actually went to his draft, like the actual footage of his draft, and saw how they pronounced it. And there, everyone who's a broadcaster in the NBA has got some kind of phonetic cheat sheet. So I think that they're
right.
You know, a word like colonel in our language doesn't have an R in it, but we pronounce the R. So there are cases where you're pronouncing a letter that's not there.
Well, and another great example, popcorn kernel versus colonel, a.k.a. Colonel Sanders. Right. Same pronunciation spelled completely differently.
Okay, so here's something very interesting. I went to Giannis's basketball reference page because they always have the pronunciation guides. And they have some of the like really phonetic spelling. So they do Giannis, Y-A-H-N-I-S-S for Giannis. And then they do Antetokounmpo, A-H, and then they have dashes. So they do A-H-D-E-D-O-K-O-O-N-B-O. So they also have this B thing. So they do Adetokunbo.
So they take the N out.
They don't care about the N at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adetokunbo.
Okay. That sounds like you're saying it when you have a cold. Like Adetokunbo.
And then what's also interesting is that they on Basketball Reference say his last name was previously spelled a different way. So I guess this is just maybe like Greek and having different letters than us in English. But it says last name previously spelled Adetokunbo, which would really match that. That's Adetokunbo, and that's pretty close to what they have, which is Adetokunbo. So that's very interesting. It does also list his nicknames on Basketball Reference as the Greek Freak and the Alphabet. So very fitting.
Well, there's a guy in Baseball Reference, whose nickname is the Password, because his name is spelled so absurdly and with so many consonants in a row. But
Will Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But in the interest of time, since we don't have Gabe for too much longer, we have to at least balance it out and do one challenging WNBA name. And I have chosen, I want to make sure I'm saying this right, Sue Bird. No, we're not going to do that. But let's go with Nneka Ogwumike, which is the real spelling is N-N-E-K-A is the first name. Nneka. And Ogwumike, O-G-W-U-M-I-K-E. So let's start with Nneka. That feels more approachable.
Okay. Nneka, you have a double N, don't need the double N. Without that, though, the first word, the first name is pretty phonetic. So I would go N-E-K-A, Nneka. Ogwumike?
How do you know it's not Nika? Like, is there a way to, is it like, would a double K help?
There should be two E's in the simplified spelling world. If her name is Nneka Ogwumike, I think you would add the E.
Okay.
Yeah, or put an accent on it. So if you're pronouncing Nneka, N-E-K-A, that means the letter E in every scenario should be pronounced eh. Across the board, okay. Eh. And if it's an E or I, it's got to either be a double E or an I-H or something. So
okay,
Nneka, across the board. And then Ogwumike, mm-hmm. O-G-W, you got to get it, double O, and then M, double E-K-A-Y.
Yeah,
I know it expands the number of letters, and usually the simplified spellers were trying to contract words and reduce the number of letters, but sometimes you can't get around adding letters if you're trying to be as phonetic as possible.
Right.
If I might add a suggestion for one more, just to diversify in multiple ways, the one that's always bugged me, can we do Mike Krzyzewski, who definitely spells his name so differently than I always have to say Mike Krzyzewski when I end up spelling it out.
I just say Coach K because I don't want to deal with it.
Oh, that's what most of the world does. But yeah, first name Mike, that one's pretty straightforward.
Well,
but then Krzyzewski is somehow K-R-Z-Y-Z-E-W-S-K-I.
Well, let's start with Mike because now you're pushing back on M-I-K-E being phonetic.
Yeah.
Would it be M-Y-K?
Yeah, M-Y-K.
If your goal is to get rid of silent letters, M-Y-K, Mike. Oh, that's tough.
Because otherwise it's Mick.
Yeah, M-Y-K. I think that's good. Okay, I approve.
And Krzyzewski, got to be an SH, right? In a phonetic spelling?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Maybe.
S-H-S-H. Krzyzew.
E-F.
S-H. Yeah.
S-K-I. Or S-K-E-E.
But how do you differentiate the Krzyzew? Because it's Krzyzewski. So would you just go S-H... S-H again, and hope that people understand that's what that means.
S-H-U-S-H. Shush, chef. Like, the first syllable is shush. So S-H-U-S-H-E-F-S-K-I.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, like, the phonetic spelling on the internet is S-H-U-H-S-H-E-V-S-K-E-E. They do sh, shev, ski.
Yeah, because if you did that first syllable...
So that would be similar.
If you did that first syllable without the vowel, it would sound like shevsky. Shevsky.
It sounds like Shevsky is trying to be quieted down a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shevsky's got some things. So he's got some, he's got some skeletons in the closet. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shh, we don't talk about
that. He's got some food to deliver down the mountain. Go, Shevsky.
Okay.
Go.
This was very enjoyable. We know you are literally in the middle of moving, so we're not going to keep you much longer, but this is a very important question. Where can people keep track of you? Where can people follow you online? Is there a preferred way for someone to purchase the book, like a particular place that you'd like them to do that? The floor is yours.
GabeHenry.com. I'm on Instagram at Gabe.Henry. And preferred place, you know, it's always good to shop local, but also for convenience, anywhere online is great. Amazon might be the most convenient place. I don't know if that's always, if that always means it's the, you know, the morally correct place.
I mean, shop.org lets you do both. You can buy it online and also support a local bookstore. When I can't get it in person, I got yours at the Astoria bookstore.
Oh,
so I went local on everything. It was cool. It was on a display. It was really easy to find.
That's
awesome. But yeah, bookshop.org is what I do when I can't get it super locally.
I mean, I love buying online. It's like you wait 2 days and then it's like Christmas arrived because you forgot you ordered it. And then you're like, what gift is this?
I love that.
Yeah.
And you've also been blessed with, frankly, a pretty phonetic name, which is kind of ironic in all of this. Gabe G-A. Henry, you didn't even have to spell it out. People just knew.
I know. Well, you too, Adam. I don't know if I would change your spelling at all.
That's what's funny. I always talk about how people get so thrown by my last name, but it's pronounced exactly how you would think it would be. But
it's then not, people just think see the number of letters
and the A's.
Panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to you too on having a phonetic name. Mike, you're not terrible. I think I'd give you like a 7 out of 10 for phonetics.
Yeah, I'll tell you. People forget the C all the time. And it only upsets me when it's happening in a written format, like in where you can see my name. Like when people send me an email and misspell my name or reply to something on social media where all my handles have the SCH, then it's like,
yeah,
what
you're
are
looking
we
at
doing? Yeah. Or anytime anyone messages me about one of my podcasts that has my name in the like logo, come on.
Actually, the last thing I want to say about Giannis is a few years ago, the NBA was taking all-star voting. They're doing all-star voting on like Twitter.
Oh,
or
right.
Instagram. You just write the name of the person and then hashtag it something. And Giannis had like 1,000 different spellings. Like you look at it and no two people in the world spell it the same.
That would be such an interesting study for the person who had to be in charge of tallying those. It's like how many different poorly spelled versions of Giannis did you have to count as votes? I'm sure that was a nightmare. And I would also, we should look at the stats of like Giannis's all-star votes and like, was there a dip in that year compared to the other year or like other play? Because I'm sure everybody went up in those years, but like, was Giannis's rise lower than people like, you know, like Steve Nash would have been or something? So interesting.
Yeah. That's and awesome. And you see someone like politicians like Pete Buttigieg or Zoran Mamdani, they come up with mnemonics. You know, they'll come up with a song or they'll say it to this or they'll come up with a shirt that shows you how to pronounce it phonetically. If name recognition is so important in these kind of voting scenarios, politics or all-star games, that you can't leave it up to chance that people are just dumb.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Gabe, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much. And looking forward to seeing you back out there on the field.
Thanks,
guys.
We
got a playoff push to do. We got to make the playoffs. Come on.
We do.
We do. And by the time this podcast comes out, we might be champions. Knock on wood. Sorry.
No. Don't worry. This is coming out this Tuesday. So we objectively won't be champions. But we will.
But hopefully we
possibly
are fresh off a victory.
Yeah, closer to a playoff berth.
Yeah.
And that way there's no potential jinx happening here.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse. Horse is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schuber. Our editor is Kensi Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Capomanes. The art is by Alison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burridge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed. We're going to go back to the original here. Steph Curry for 3.
Bang!
Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, Mats Furley, and Utah Jash. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse underscore Hoops because...
Oh, well, Horse Hoops, they're spelling stuff all wildly and we just couldn't...
Actually, I believe at Horse Hoops spelled Giannis so egregiously wrong that they got booted from Twitter. And you can't, you know, 100%. Understandable.
Just can't do it. Can't do it.
You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to Gabe's book and other fun stuff that we talked about.
Yeah, and if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops. You'll get access to a whole bunch of cool bonus stuff. Maybe us talking more about things like how DeAndre Ayton is on the Lakers now because he got bought out by the very bad Blazers. What a compliment to him that a terrible team says, please leave. We don't want you around anymore. But he's going to bring a championship to LeBron. but you could also go to horsehoops.com/merch. You can get digital merch. You can get physical merch like Seth Nerds' basketball shirts. Someone recently did get the wallpaper thing in the ringtone, so shout out to you for doing that.
Love it.
But that's all at horsehoops.com/merch. But now we're going to do what we always do. We just put our hands in the middle and say something on the count of three. What do we got?
You know what? I think to honor Gabe's book, let's go with Enough is Enough on three.
Enough is Enough on three, yes, which I did trash talk to him after getting a hit off of him. I can't believe I didn't talk about me trash talking to him when I had him on. I'm like, damn it. Alrighty. One, two, three.
Enough is Enough. Love it. Also, I rate you higher than me in softball. It was very nice of Gabe, but...
Thank you. Yeah, I think he very much appreciates your first base, which is good. And there's a bunch of people who have no idea about covering. So I think it's a pitcher first base connection.
He might have been biased. But you know, we're both great and gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are.